Devices Radio Network.
Welcome to Advices Radio Stories Edition. I'm Scott McNally. The subject of today's episode is eating disorders, and more specifically, eating disorders within the bodybuilding and fitness industry. This episode is hosted by Andrea Watson. Andrea has worked as the editor for the Advices Radio Network, and I'm happy to say that she's now stepped in front of the microphone. This is our first attempt at a collaboration, and I'm excited to see what we can do next. I'm confident you're going to enjoy the perspective that Andrea brings to our programs, and I hope you enjoy this show.
I've wondered for a long time what the difference between being a bodybuilder or even just living a bodybuilding lifestyle and having an eating disorder really is. I mean, how many of us have gotten into a mode where we're so obsessed with calories that we've cried when we accidentally went 100 calories over our daily limit? Or binged so hard that we've gotten sick? Or pulled over on the side of the road to eat cold meal 5 out of Tupperware because we're trying to grow and can't afford to miss a meal? Or is that just me? The point is, it takes an obsessive person to want to be into bodybuilding in the first place. I don't think anyone would argue that bodybuilding leads to a weird obsession with nutrition, but I think most people know that that's part of the terms and conditions that come with diving into bodybuilding to begin with. So if it's something that you acknowledge and accept from the beginning, when does it start to be a problem? Is it only when it's perceived as negative by the affected individual, like in the case of a harsh post-show rebound? Maybe there needs to be some sort of disclaimer that you have to sign when you start lifting, stating that you fully understand that once you start looking at food from the standpoint of a bodybuilder, you'll never be able to go back to being happily ignorant and normal. Some people might believe that eating clean, or sticking to a meal plan, or counting macros is disordered eating. But we also live in a world where there are entire social media accounts dedicated to food porn. Sure, bodybuilders take things to extremes, we know this. But at this point, it seems pretty necessary for the majority of people everywhere to learn how to at least count calories in order to remain at a healthy weight and body composition. In this episode, you'll hear from Heather, Nate, and Brett. Each of these amazing individuals have a different personal perspective to share. Their interviews remind me that personal goals have a lot to do with being mentally healthy, and that sitting back and taking an objective look at your behavior surrounding food is definitely a worthwhile thing to do from time to time. Maybe you'll take something totally different away from what you hear. I hope that no matter what your takeaway is from this episode, it's overall positive and gives you some tools for self-evaluation and a better understanding of disordered eating and its ability to impact people involved in bodybuilding. I had the privilege to interview Heather Petrasco, who's a registered dietitian and has competed in both bikini and figure. She also struggled with anorexia and bulimia for 10 years, and now brings her unique perspective to her work with eating disorder clients. As you'll hear, she's actually experienced professional backlash due to participating in bodybuilding. Her experiences give her a wealth of insight into disordered eating, its causes, and signs to watch out for. Hey, Heather, how's it going today?
Good, Andrea. It's good to speak with you.
You as well. Thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely.
So maybe we could get started by just having you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for a living and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm a registered dietitian. I work for a major healthcare organization, and then as well, I also work in private practice, seeing clients for a variety of different concerns, anything from weight management to food allergies and intolerances, and definitely eating disorders, as we'll touch upon later. I've been a registered dietitian for the past 6 years. And I think because of my own background and my own food issues, that's probably what had a major contribution to me going into the nutrition field and learning more about it, as well as a strong desire to help other people. I did develop and experience some eating disorders when I was younger. And actually, my story of how I developed the eating disorders is actually pretty typical. And based on the research that we see now with risk factors for development of eating disorders, looking back, I kind of see that there were a lot of those present in my own case. When I was younger, and I had experienced some bullying because of my weight, which can be a really big contributor to eating disorders, especially in younger people. Mm. I was used to very changing environments, so my family had moved quite a bit. So I was forced to, you know, start over at new schools, begin making new friends multiple times. And that can be, as I'm sure you can imagine, a stressful situation for a child to go through.
Certainly.
And some of the research does suggest that there is a genetic component to eating disorders. So in my extended family, histories of depression and substance abuse, and myself being diagnosed with OCD at an early age, I believe that I had those genetic predisposing factors and then the environmental triggers that cascaded into development of anorexia. That was the first experience I had. So anorexia nervosa is a restrictive type eating disorder. That's typically what most people think of when you think of an eating disorder. It's highly restrictive eating to the point where starvation symptoms start to occur. You'll see rapid weight loss. And I started into that when I was around 10. I can fondly remember throwing out the lunches my mom would pack for me. And at that point, I became very interested in the caloric content of food. So even though the internet wasn't really around at that point, I had gotten encyclopedias from my family's library and could even at that young of age memorize the caloric content of some of the foods I regularly consumed. So that began a slippery slope until about the age 12 when it really got to more of a severe point for me. At that point, I was hospitalized for the first time, about 8 weeks. And I refused to eat even in the hospital. So I was given a feeding tube. And even despite trying to pull that out, I had to be sedated and put it back in. So I did receive two feedings for quite a while until I got to the point where I would start to eat on my own. Then, within the next couple of years, I did go through a variety of treatment programs, both inpatient and outpatient, but it didn't necessarily clear up the eating issues I had, and I did begin to express those in different ways. So I started into self-induced vomiting, which is characteristic of the eating disorder bulimia nervosa. And that is where one purges after they've consumed a binge amount of food or a large amount of food. Then we see whether it's in self-induced vomiting or over-exercise, some compensatory mechanism of getting rid of the food or the calories. Definitely suffered with that for a number of years. I was binging and purging multiple times a day. And even though I didn't experience the severity of weight loss as I did with the anorexia, it was really destroying my body. And there's a whole host of physical damage that comes along with bulimia, everything from esophageal tears, electrolyte imbalances. And it's really a very psychologically damaging eating disorder. I find with a lot of the clients that I see too, there is a strong desire to get better. Unlike anorexia, in bulimia, a lot of people do realize that they're doing something detrimental to themselves and they do want to get better. And I did feel that way at the time, but it was a compulsion too that I had to overcome.
So what ultimately sort of led you to seek help? And, you know, I assume you're recovered now. So what did the ultimate recovery process look like for you?
Well, I'm very fortunate because at the time, as I mentioned, I was at quite a young age. So my parents were actively involved and got me into inpatient treatment programs in the hospital, as well as insisted that I maintain an outpatient counseling program as well. So that involved everything from medical monitoring, psychotherapy with a counselor, antidepressant medications. But at the end of the day, and especially as I got older, it was really, I came to a point where after some really low points in my life, I was able and I was fortunate to realize that the eating disorders was really a detriment to my life in general, and that a lot of other areas of my life were suffering. And so I gradually started to improve upon my eating, became a little bit more flexible. It certainly wasn't overnight, but with the help of a lot of support members, like I said, my counselors, medical team, and my family, started to improve my intake. So, and it wasn't perfect eating. It wasn't, there were still, you know, disordered behaviors from time and time again. I went through periods of what we consider orthorexia, which is a obsession about healthy eating, which is it's another eating disorder. It's typically not as severe in terms of physical consequences, but definitely there's the emotional and the psychological component. And I also experienced a nighttime eating syndrome. It's another clinically diagnosed eating disorder in which it wakes up at night and feels a compulsion to eat. And so I think I've fared my fair share of eating disorders. So I'm really glad to be at a place where it's not an issue in my life anymore.
And would you consider yourself fully recovered, or do you think that eating disorders are something that people can fully recover from in general, or are they more like an addiction where maybe you're always going to deal with symptoms throughout the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm. I think if you speak to anyone who's either experienced an eating disorder or who's worked with people that do experience eating disorders, it's always going to be something that we're going to need to work on. I'm very fortunate today that I have absolutely no desire to severely restrict my intake or to binge and purge or to spend all my time at the gym. I've lived that life of hell, and at this point you couldn't pay me to go back to it. But that doesn't mean that some ugly thoughts never pop up. And whether that's an urge to diet or to feel some anxiety because of, you know, the number on the scale, or if I indulge in a heavier meal and feel a sense of fullness, there can be some anxiety that comes along with that. I think what I would consider a successful recovery for myself and where I'm at this point is that I'm able to counteract those irrational thoughts with very rational thinking. And so I may have a thought, and it is rare that I would have a thought, but if it does come up, I'm able to recognize that, deal with it, and not let it turn into a destructive behavior or go any further than that. And that's something I try to instill with my clients, that eating disorders and, you know, disordered thinking may never be out of their life. I mean, it'd be great if it was, but it may never be completely gone. And so one way that we can at least help ourselves is to be able to deal with that in a more compassionate and healthier manner, that we're not leading to problems.
Gotcha. So you had mentioned previously that you actually competed in physique sports previously. Yeah. And some people might find that a little contradictory to, you know, having an eating disorder in the past. So what made you decide to compete in the first place, and what were the ups and downs of your experience?
Yes. Yeah, I did compete in a couple fitness competitions a couple years ago. I did bikini and figure. And it was actually my husband, who was an avid competitor himself, who encouraged me to. And he knew my history. He knew the extent of what I had gone through with eating disorders. And in his opinion, and I'm sure other people would agree that a fitness competition could be a way to help someone who's already gotten to a strong level of recovery to further enhance their health and their bodies. So the thing with fitness competitions and bodybuilding as a whole is that, you know, we're working to build up our bodies, to build and maintain muscle. And a big thing for me, and I think that one avenue that he was approaching it with, is that it would get me off, you know, the chronic cardio, the exercising for the purpose of burning calories and more of a punishment sense, and start treating my body in a way that I was proud of it and that I was working to improve my physique.
And so, gotcha.
Yeah. And so there were benefits. Even though I've stepped away from fitness competitions and bodybuilding, it's still something that I think did serve me well. And I did take away from it, despite maybe some of the drawbacks as well. So I'm not at all against the sport. I still follow it through social media. I enjoy watching the competitions. I've just chosen to not be as involved as a competitor standpoint for myself, realizing that it wasn't for me. I did look forward to the training, and like I mentioned earlier, it was a way to enhance my body as rather than a punishment. I made sure I got all my meals in, like any good bodybuilder, and so I was taking pretty good care of myself. And I am very fortunate that I didn't have to drop my calories very low or engage in a lot of cardio to get to the level of leanness that I needed. I was just competing at the local level, so I didn't have to go to the extremes that maybe you would expect at maybe a national level or advanced. So I'm very fortunate for that. Now, on the other side, there were some drawbacks. Certainly, I reverted back to a level of obsession with my meals. And I think that there is a fine line with bodybuilding, with it being an extreme sport, between healthy and obsessive. And so even to get all my meals in, I was, you know, weighing, measuring everything. There was some anxiety that I experienced about maybe not being lean enough in time for the show, not muscular enough. And one thing that I really tried to be mindful of during the process is not letting the bodybuilding lifestyle take over my whole life. So, and my husband was a good motivation and a role model for that. You know, we still maintained a lot of social relationships and tried to lead a relatively normal life. And I think that can be an issue that people run into with it, you know, taking over their lives.
So it sounds like you definitely think it's possible for people to compete without developing disordered eating habits and to keep it within the realm of sort of a healthy relationship with working out and food. But do you think bodybuilding in general can be sort of a pathway for people to overcome eating disorders or disordered eating? Or is it more just the lifting and the building up of your body that you see as a healthy enterprise?
Right. I think it can. For someone who's experienced an eating disorder, I think entering the world of bodybuilding and fitness competitions, there is potential for it to enhance a person's recovery. But I do think, that being said, you have to be very careful and you have to go into it recognizing and having the insight that you've dealt with food issues in the past, and that in a fitness competition and a bodybuilding, that kind of industry, you know, could stimulate some and trigger some of those old thoughts. I would definitely recommend that someone be in a very strong point in their recovery. So bodybuilding is not for someone who, you know, has recently dealt with an eating disorder or is still challenged on a regular basis by disordered thoughts or disordered actions. So definitely getting to a place where, you know, you've been at a healthy weight for a while, hormonally you're doing well, you're able to eat a good amount of calories and maintain your weight. So there are definitely some prerequisitions that I would say that have to be in place before anyone would even consider going down the path of bodybuilding. And I think it's also important to see bodybuilding and the sport of fitness competitions as a temporary activity or a sport engagement. So there are people, you know, that I know that are able to go in and out of prep, compete, and then return to what we consider a normal life afterwards. And in my opinion, that's a successful way of competing. Whereas there's people that it becomes a obsessive lifestyle for them. So I think that's a big difference there. I would definitely suggest to anyone who's had an eating disorder to make sure that they are taking time in between competitions to take a step back to, again, get back to that more regular, normal lifestyle where maybe they're not tracking their food as tightly. They're able to go to the gym and enjoy it beyond just, you know, getting their workout done for that day. And overall, I think it's extremely important for people to be mindful. If they do start to have those thoughts of highly restrictive diets, if they're tempted to engage in any disordered actions, then they need to take a step back, you know, perhaps working with a therapist. And there's no shame, too, for someone who perhaps gets into the sport, realizes it's not for them. There's no shame in taking a step back. I think that that's one thing that people need to realize is that, you know, you're not quitting, but you may be doing the right thing for yourself. It's certainly not a sport for everyone. And you, at the end of the day, you have to do what's best for you.
So what can competitors do to realize, or what would be some good signs that people can look out for that might indicate that they actually have a disorder? I mean, as bodybuilders, I guess most people would say that, like you said, the lifestyle is already a little obsessive, weighing food, counting macros to the gram. So how do you know when that line has been crossed and you do need to seek help?
Yeah, it's a very fine line, but I really think it comes down to intention. So I'll give you a situation. You may have two very similar people who are engaging in the act of weighing themselves daily, which is obviously a typical component of a bodybuilding competition, is just maintaining, you know, your weight records. And so for one person, that could be a very objective measure of how their body is progressing, and they use it to maybe to the extent of how their meal plan is set up and how they're making changes. But on the other hand, for that second person, it could be a very psychologically damaging action to do that, in the sense that their mood, their actions for the day are completely dependent upon what that number is that morning. So I think it's, again, what is the intention? What are you hoping to get done? For bodybuilders, the intention would be to be doing well at the show, becoming better. And they're choosing to restrict foods for the goal of body composition. And one big thing is that we would expect them to be able to introduce foods back into the diet without a struggle after the competition. Now, for someone with an eating disorder, they could, on the outside, be displaying the similar actions of restricting food, of taking away certain foods or food groups, but the intention behind those actions is going to be quite different. So a lot of the times that comes from them being unhappy with themselves, with feelings of poor self-worth, not being good enough. They may be restricting food unnecessarily because of the fear of weight gain, fear of not being in control. And certainly something that we would often see is that they're not able to comfortably reintroduce foods after competition. So the competition is not the end point for them. They're going to continue restricting, or at least maintain that sense of extreme restriction they started out to in the show.
So you've actually faced some discrimination as a health professional from the health community for having participated in physique sports and competed. So what do you wish other people who do work with eating disordered patients knew about bodybuilding, so that they could potentially help competitors in a more positive manner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, bodybuilding and the fitness industry in general does tend to have a negative reputation in other health circles, especially when it comes to eating disorder communities. And obviously, some of that is true. And for someone with an eating disorder, I would not encourage bodybuilding. But that being said, there is, again, this stereotype of bodybuilders and fitness competitors that is not true for the community in general. And so I would like other practitioners to know that people go about their preparation for competitions in very different ways. As I mentioned earlier, I was very fortunate that I didn't drop my calories, didn't feel the need to based on the level that I was at. And so while people may have to get into very low calorie diets and go to some extreme measures, some people are able to do it in a little bit more balanced ways. So it's not a one approach fits all when it comes to preparation for bodybuilding. I think another misconception is that if you are involved in bodybuilding, that you are using steroids or other anabolic compounds, which is not the truth. So some people may choose to use those types of supplements, but it's not everyone. And so I don't think it's fair to label everyone with that label. And then also, too, I think that maybe other practitioners don't realize that some people are very successful in keeping bodybuilding as a hobby in their life, and that they're still able to maintain successful family lives, careers, and overall balance without becoming obsessive. And typically, you know, these people are maybe keeping that very restrictive time to the 12 to 24 weeks. You know, most bodybuilders are not walking around stage lean year round. And so they are balancing it with other aspects of their life and a more healthful, maintainable status of body composition. And then one last thing is that I think from the outside looking in, bodybuilding can seem, just a vanity activity. And I realize becoming a little bit more involved in it, that this is not necessarily the case. I mean, sure, it is at the true heart of it. It is based on the appearance of oneself. But at the same time, too, there's a lot that goes into it. I certainly learned more about discipline. I learned a lot more about nutrition. So despite my training as a dietitian, I actually picked up a lot of other information about nutrition and about metabolism through going through the bodybuilding process. So that's it's a learning opportunity. And I think when I talk with most competitors that they do enjoy the process of competition prep. So in their minds, it's not a means to an end. They truly enjoy what they're doing. And that's another indication too, if you don't enjoy it, because it can be a long prep, that may be another indication that it's not something that's for you. But I think those people that do enjoy competing, they'll tell you, they enjoy the whole journey of it.
Gotcha. And where can people turn and what is the best course of action if people do feel like they're sort of spiraling out of control, they really want to reach out and get some help, but they're not sure where to turn? What would be the best process to pursue for getting help?
Yeah. So for anyone who's in the fitness community or who may be experiencing some eating disorder tendencies, it can be very scary to reach out for help. And certainly I see that a lot with my clients. There's a lot of hesitation. There are some great online resources, whether that be the National Eating Disorder Association website. They have some great resources on some information on eating disorders, as well as an area where you can find a eating disorder therapist, whether it be a dietitian or a psychologist in your area. So that website, there's a few others that offer similar resources. One thing I would definitely recommend too is that if you are concerned about your eating habits, whether they may be, on the verge of unhealthy, is definitely, again, take a step back from what you're doing. Allow yourself some time off. And in some cases, too, you're going to have to get your doctor involved. For some people that have been restricting what they're eating for a long time, we'll see, hormonal changes. We'll see issues with too long of people being on fat burners and some of the health effects from that. So there may be some medical treatments that you may need to look into with your doctor's advice. But the most important thing you can do is reach out for help. And, at the end of the day, whether you choose to continue in bodybuilding or to take a step back is completely up to you. But we just want to make sure that you're doing it in the most healthful and most sustainable way possible.
And what are some things that people who are in relationships or have family that bodybuild, what are some ways that those people can be supportive but also vigilant for any signs of disordered eating or, you know, signs that someone might actually need help?
Yeah. So one of the big things between someone who's eating a healthful diet and maybe striving for weight loss and maybe even in a bodybuilding type way versus someone who is experiencing an eating disorder is that the way in which they eat takes over their life. So if they are not able to participate in the rest of their lives, perhaps they may be canceling social engagements, skipping work time, anything that maybe they're exposed to food at, not able to spend time with the family, those can be signs that something's not right. And so that can trigger a conversation. I would definitely advise those too that are working or that are in the fitness industry who have children to just be careful too with the language that they do use at home. Children and young people are very receptive, especially to what their parents are saying. And so if they're seeing mom or dad, you know, utilizing the scale on a regular basis, weighing and measuring their food, and overall being very concerned with appearance and body composition, to just be careful, because again, those can be some factors that set someone up for an eating disorder or some disordered eating patterns. So just to be careful with that for someone who is perhaps competing. And I also think too that if you know, if you're living with some or you're close friends with someone who is competing, and if post show they have a really hard time adjusting back to a normal way of eating and a normal life style, that might be something that you just monitor and help them monitor. Again, the goal is going to be that they're going to restore some body weight. So if someone is very resistant to gaining weight post-show or is doing everything in their power to maintain that low body weight and leanness, that can be something that would be a red flag in that area. And then also to looking for things such as poor mood, depression, anxiety. With eating disorders, we see a lot of black and white thinking, and food is no longer neutral. So I'll have a lot of clients say, you know, that they're feeling bad just based on the food they ate that day. And so that's something you want to be careful of, whether it's yourself or someone that you're around. You know, if their mood completely changes based on the fact that they were not on track with their diet or they ate something that was not prescribed to them, if you're seeing that it significantly impacts their mood and their ability to function for the day, that's a big flag that we should be aware of.
Gotcha. So you mentioned, you know, skipping social functions and kind of shutting yourself away due to food, but that does sound like a lot of people's competition preps. So yeah. Would you say that, you know, that's something that there's gray area when you're in prep, or is that something you just want to look out for in general all the time?
Yeah, and I realize, again, that's something on that fine line of bodybuilding and then disordered eating. And so I think, again, it gets back to what is the intention behind it. If you're someone who's got a competition, you know, 8 weeks out, and you are feeling like you need to skip a Friday night, you know, bar night with the guys or whatnot, then there most likely is, you know, a good reason behind that. You've got a priority. You've worked quite hard, probably over the past year or so, to get ready for that. But on the other side, you know, if you're 8 weeks post-show and you are, after a string of Friday nights, consistently declining or don't feel any urge to be around other people, are not interested in socializing, I think those are two very different situations. And the second one would definitely trigger a little bit more investigation in terms of, you know, what is contributing to this isolation behavior So yeah, it is a very fine line. But I think what I would recommend to clients and to competitors is that try as much as possible to get back to those social engagements, family obligations after your show, if you have been in the tendency to avoid them or to skip out on them during your preparation.
Perfect. And is there anything before we finish up that we haven't talked about that you'd like people to be aware of as far as just disordered eating in general and keeping healthful?
Yeah. One last thing is that when, especially when people are getting to the level of leadness for some of the shows, I want people to realize too and be accepting of that that's going to be a more temporary state for your body. So your body is going to fight it if you're going to try to stay at stage leanness. And so to expect that too. I've seen some clients that have come to me not necessarily from a bodybuilding background, but just that they have been either abusing fat burners by using them too long. If bodybuilders are using, you know, things like T3 or fat burners, where they can actually contribute to some really negative health effects. We know that some of these supplements, if used long term, can contribute to bone loss. And that's a major concern I see with a lot of my female clients, especially if they've been dieting a lot. A lot of times the menstruation will stop as well. So they're losing out on estrogen. And it's unfortunate, but we do see people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that are dealing with things such as osteoporosis, a lot of issues with fertility. So just one thing to consider too is that, yes, this diet, a restrictive type diet, may be necessary for your show preparation, but it should not be something that you're pursuing long term as long as you want to keep your health in check.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Heather.
Oh, thank you.
Heather answered a lot of questions for us, and after speaking to her, we got to thinking. Eating disorders are often thought of as a problem that females have, but that's clearly not the case. Males suffer from disorders as well, and often in more silence than their female counterparts due to social stigma. We decided that it would be interesting to get a male perspective on this topic. Up next, you'll hear Scott talk with Nate Tebow. Nate is a fitness model and diet coach that had suffered from an eating disorder as a young man in high school, and he now uses his experiences to help others.
Yeah, so it was pretty early on in my younger years. I was about 15 when I hit the real rock bottom of it. I would say it probably started, you know, around that time, 14, 15 years old.
What were you seeing at that time?
You know, at first it was good intentions at first. It was just, you know, exercising, eating healthier and, dropping some weight because, you know, I was a little bit, on the softer side, okay. kind of a husky kid. But it just developed into something very, very toxic and to the point where I couldn't stop. I just didn't know, you know, I was getting down. I got down to 112 pounds, you know, at 6 feet tall at the lowest of it. And, you know, my hair was falling out. It was freezing all the time. I couldn't, you know, sit on a hard chair for more than, you know, 20 minutes without being in agony. And it was really, all the signs were there, but it's the kind of affliction where, and until you're really forced into treatment, it's not something you're going to do on your own. A lot of times, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, yeah, it wasn't until I went to a physical, went to the doctors, and, you know, my heart rate was extremely low, had an electrolyte imbalance, and they basically just said, you have to go to the hospital right now.
Wow.
You know, so spent the night in the hospital. I spent a few days in the hospital. And you know, when you're there and you're basically, you know, they were force feeding me and, you know, doing blood work multiple times a day. And, I mean, it was a real humbling experience and real wake up call where I was like, yeah, wow, you know, I have a problem. And
so how
I got to do something about it.
How long did this progression go on, this decline, before you reached that point of having to go to the hospital?
I would say it was probably, I mean, from start to finish, it was probably a year of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, it was pretty rapid. It was pretty rapid. I went from, I can't even remember where it was, probably in the 180s somewhere, and just got all the way down to, yeah, I remember weighing at the doctor's on that day, and 112 pounds with clothes on, you know. So
you know, like you said, this started out with good intentions. How long did it take before people around you started recognizing this? Because I imagine that, you know, initially they hear, oh, you know, Nate's exercising and you know, Nate's watching his diet. They probably, I'm going to guess, initially saw it as a positive thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it was, you know, but then you get to a point where I was, you know, people go, like, you're getting kind of thin, you know, you doing all right. And I was like, yeah, you know, like in your head, you're fine. Right. But yeah, I mean, everyone notices it around you. I mean, with the way I was, I mean, I was skin and bones towards the end of it. And there's no way people weren't looking at me and just knowing something was wrong.
Yeah. How did your parents feel about all this?
Well, at that time in my life, I mean, they were really the people I was around the most, right? Because, you know, 14, 15 years old. 15
yeah.
years old. So, yeah, I mean, of course they were worried. And, you know, I'm sure it took a big toll on them as well, seeing me go through that, because it's not just, it's not something that, you know, you can just talk somebody out of.
Yeah.
You can't just say, you know, well, just eat more, or what do you think? Stop losing weight. It becomes your identity, and it's not one that you want to give up.
Interesting. So take me through, I'm trying to imagine here, you know, what the home situation was like then. Let's say you guys all sit down for dinner one night as a family, or you go out to eat. How did you deal with that at the time, considering that, you know, now I'm assuming too that, are we talking about like more of anorexia where you just were not putting food into your system?
So it was, I mean, the thing with me is that, you know, and even now as a fitness professional and a bodybuilder, my metabolism is so high. So, you know, I was still eating probably 1,000 to, you know, 1,200 calories a day, but that was severe starvation for me. And even now, getting ready for photo shoot shapes, I mean, I can diet on 3,000 calories, and that's a severe deficit for me. My metabolism is just insane. But so, you know, it was a misnomer that I was like not eating. That's the thing about it. What it is it's a control mechanism. So I'm obsessed. I was obsessively counting calories, even pieces of gum, you know, and just like, instead of paying attention in class, I was, you know, calculating my calories, you know, with a pen and a paper on my notebook, and, you know, just making sure that by the end of the day, I would still be at a certain number and whatever it was. But you know, if I knew that, I had a home cooked meal, it would kind of give me anxiety, you know, and I would just be like, yeah, you know, geez, I can't tell exactly what's in this calorically. Mm. So, it's tough, you know, but, yeah, I remember that being a big stressor.
So how would you deal with that? You know, you're sitting out to eat with your family and they're asking you, Nate, why aren't you eating your cheeseburger? Would you still order food or how would that go?
Yeah, I would order food, but I would just order, you know, like salads and, you know, really just low calorie stuff.
Okay.
You know, things that I could control, things that were very basic, that I could pretty much guesstimate, was low calorie.
Okay. Interesting. So, it sounds like exercise played a big role in this. Did that become a part of the obsession too? Were you, say, using too much cardio and too much, you know, resistance training to try to burn off even more?
To be honest with you, at that point, not really. there was a time where I was kind of doing it. There was a point where I just kind of stopped working out, and I just, you know, I was just eating less. And, it was never really a matter of, you know, using the exercise as a control mechanism. It was always just the food. But that's what got me into, you know, I mean, the positive of it was, you know, while recovering, that's when I discovered the weights and, doing that whole scene. And that saved my life. So
interesting. And I definitely want to get to all that, cause I feel like that's a huge element to your recovery. It sounds like, and this is something I want to tell you that I can relate to. When I hit puberty, I got real overweight for a few years, and I had learned to control food, in a way to kind of, for me, you know, and I'm still not even totally clear as to why I was doing it. You know, why some people have that in them and why others don't. I'm sure you've thought about this a lot now. Why is it that you think that this was your go-to mechanism?
Well, that's a good question. And I think that most, if not all, eating disorders come down to one thing, and that's control. Yeah. So it's a control mechanism. It's a coping mechanism. It's if you feel like you're maybe not in control of anything around you, you resort to what you can control, and that's what you put in your body or what you don't put in your body. Hmm. You can control the way you look by manipulating certain things. So a lot of people, if they feel out of control, if they feel like they are not expressing themselves or not able to express themselves in a certain way, maybe, I mean, you see this a lot in midlife with people. They kind of lose they kind of never really discover who they are, and then they go through like a midlife crisis.
Yeah,
you know, for some people it's eating disorders. Other people it's, you know, spending money. But it's all rooted in fear in control. So it's a false sense of safety. It's a false sense of control.
Sure.
But yeah, it becomes just a coping mechanism to kind of distract yourself, I guess, from dealing with the root of it.
Hmm. I find that even to this day, if I get stressed, my go-to mechanism is to still stop eating. Like, it becomes real difficult for me to get the nutrition and I need to do what I want to do in the sport of bodybuilding. You know, I feel like that with things like addiction, and I would consider this to be, you know, an addiction almost. It's this compulsive behavior. I feel like it's something that will always be part of me. Do you feel that this is something that is still active or part of you today that you could fall back into if you were to let yourself?
I don't think so. You know, but it's funny you mention it, because here's how I see it. Is bodybuilding was like a natural transition, because in a sense it's still a way to kind of control your reality.
Yeah.
In the sense of you're turning a destructive habit into a constructive habit, so you're turning a negative addiction into a positive addiction. Because I mean, let's face it, bodybuilding is pretty addictive. It's a pretty addictive thing. It's not, you know, it is to a degree. You have to have a certain kind of addictive personality to succeed in it.
Oh, sure.
So it was a natural transition, really. You know, you're turning your adversity into an advantage. So, I mean, I have an addictive personality. That's who I am. I'm either completely interested in something or I'm just completely disinterested in something. There's no middle ground. It's an on or an off switch. So if I do something, it's balls to the wall. And with bodybuilding, it was just a way for me to channel that addictive personality to something positive, as opposed to using it as a self-destructive means, you know, with eating disorder.
Okay. Now I'm still learning about what you do, and you're a fitness model, correct?
Yeah, you know, it's part of what I do. My purpose, my career, is, you know, I do transformational mindset coaching and fitness coaching. I mean, yes, you know, I do, you know, it's a combination of training, nutrition, and mindset. You know, mindset work to me is just non-negotiable. You know, and a lot of that I credit to everything that I have been through, you know, in my life with eating disorders and whatnot. But I believe that fitness is very much a game from the neck up, and bodybuilding even more so. It's a consulting based business, one-on-one with clients, you know, very hands-on, very interactive. But yeah, that is, you know, fitness modeling for me is, it is part of what I do. It's really just an avenue to reach more people. And that's just quite frankly the look that I've always been chasing.
Yeah. Have you competed or do you plan to in the future at all?
No, you know, I was actually getting ready, or I had plans to do a show last summer. But I just kind of realized, you know, I was asking myself as the prep was kind of going on, like, what? I was not excited for it. I was not excited to compete. And when I just broke it down, I just, you know, it doesn't resonate with me. I don't have a desire to be better than other people in the sense, like, not in the sense of, like, I'm a better, I don't have a desire to really just, like, oh, I want to beat this dude. I want to beat that dude. I just want to beat me, right? Yeah. And I don't need to compete to do that. So, for me, you know, I love fitness modeling because it's either you look better than your last shoot, or you look worse, or, you know, and then it's a way where you can market yourself, and it's a way where you can reach other people, because these pictures last a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's not just you standing there and being judged against other people.
Yeah.
It's you, man. Like, you did it or you didn't.
Okay. Yeah. And what I'm getting at here was, you know, just because of the, to get into contest shape, or of course, you know, to get into fitness model shape, it's going to require, you know, the dieting down process. I think I kind of know the answer to this just by what you've already said, but do you feel that at any time that it could become a negative thing?
I think that, you know, and this is why I work so closely with people in mindset, is because if you go into a contest diet or a photo shoot prep, not in the right headspace, it can easily turn into that. Yeah. And it's all about the person's personality. So you gotta keep that, you know, yes, there are some sacrifices that need to be made when you're doing a prep or you're doing a photo shoot. I tell people that straight off the bat. It's like, listen, this is not for everybody.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody. It's not going to be a balanced thing. You know, it's just like, this is your goal and this is what you focus on. And, for some people they can do it. Other people, it turns into just very destructive, and, you know, they get into that contest shape, and then, everything after that, it looks obese to them. Hmm. And they get into this, you know, warped perception of, I have to be, you know, bone dry and, you know, whatever percent body fat year round, stage condition year round. And I mean, really, that's not going to be a happy life.
Yeah.
So, but for me personally, what it is, you know, when I'm getting ready for stuff, you know, I just constantly have to remind myself that, you know, this is a temporary thing, and the actual process of it, you know, I stay very lean year round.
Yeah.
So it's not like I have to make drastic changes.
Okay.
But, you know, there was a point, I would say maybe last year, where, you know, I went through a big off season, and, you know, I got pretty heavy for me. You know, my body fat got high for me, still lean for most people, but, you know, and I was dieting down, and I did notice it was kind of overtaking me to a degree. Where I was getting a little obsessive, but, you know, I think that's kind of, I think everybody has that to a degree, that's a successful bodybuilder, successful fitness model.
I think so too.
You know, I think it's just part of it. And is that good or bad? I don't know. It just is, you know, it just is.
Here's something I'm interested in, because when you said that you felt like, you know, you were getting a little bit obsessive, and you could see how that's a negative thing. I totally get what you mean by that, but explain to the audience how is that a bad thing? I mean, you're telling me that you're focusing on, you know, the foods that you're supposed to eat. So what's so bad about that?
I think for people, what I meant by, you know, and you're right, it's all about the perception of it. you know, I think it's the point where, you know, if you, you know, training twice a day, doing everything that's, you know, required, eating, you know, on a schedule. I mean, and these are things I do pretty much year round anyways, but when you have a deadline, you tend to just kind of like shut everything else up. So you kind of lose some of that balance.
Mm.
And it can, the thing, I guess where I'm going is it can easily become selfish. It can easily become very, self-centered. And it kind of is, you know, at the end of the day, contest preps and things like that, you know, it's your goal. It's your, you know, endeavor. So,
yeah.
You know, you're not doing it for anyone else.
Right.
So it's easy to get kind of caught up in the, okay, this is all I'm going to focus on for 24 hours a day and I'm going to neglect everything else. It's not a good feeling after you kind of do that and then you, that's over and, you know, you did the shoot, you did the show. And you're like, well, I really didn't have to neglect these areas. You know,
yeah.
there was a balancing act and it's just kind of being conscious of that. So it's really just having that level of consciousness going into it.
Hmm.
So that you can identify it when it pops up, when you are getting kind of in that, just blocking everything else out and kind of being, selfish, or not very understanding of things that you normally would be, especially when you're depleted.
Yeah.
But, it's just being conscious of things.
I can see where you're coming from. So, you know, you said that you're working with clients and a lot of what you do is, you know, work that happens from the neck up. How do you keep your eye and make sure that they're not slipping into something that's negative?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, really what it comes down to is, because I've been in that position.
Yeah.
I can easily identify it. Because not only am I'm deeply empathetic, right? So I can absorb energy very easily. I can identify things others very easily. And because I've been in that state before, I know exactly, you know, if they say key phrases, I know exactly what it is. And I know exactly the kind of road they're going down to. And then we work on, okay, listen, you know, here's what I'm seeing. And then it's just a matter of kind of asking the right questions. Like, okay, why? You'll see it a lot in women. They get very hyper-focused on the scale and the number on the scale at the cost of everything else. And you really just ask them the right questions. Okay, so why is that number important when you lost body fat this week?
Right.
You know, the number didn't change, and you feel like you're a failure, but you look better. So what is the goal? Is the goal, are we number building or are we body building?
Yeah.
You know?
I like that. I like that a lot. And it sounds like you have to take, a lot of time to do something like that. This isn't something where you could just quickly check somebody in and, you know, give them their update and that's it.
No. And that's the thing is, you know, I don't work with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people because, you know, with what I do, it's very personalized. You know, I want something that I would want, you know, I want to be the kind of like, coach that I would have wanted or that I would want. And I don't want to just talk to a piece of paper. I want somebody that's actually going to take the time to work with me on my mindset and work with me on these blocks, and not just be like, you know, send a one word email.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it comes down to is there's a lot of energy that goes into it. But that's what I believe in, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, specifically a lot of times women will look at the scale and they'll see that number not going down or you know, they may have, you know, an issue with that. Now, you know, you're at the opposite end of the spectrum here, being a male who's dealing with this. And you know, the other two guests that we have on the show are both females. One of the things we thought was important was to get the male perspective on eating disorders. Can you talk a little bit about your life as a male with an eating disorder and how that might be different dealing with this than the females that have gone through similar things?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest reason I overcame it was because I did get help. But here's the rub, is that most guys are not going to get help because it's an ego thing. Because the society has made us feel like eating disorders are just a feminine thing, right? And only girls get eating disorders. And really, that could be further from the truth. You know, there are tons and tons of males that just suffer silently. They don't do anything about it. So it's really just dropping that ego and saying, like, shit, you know what? I do have a problem. And usually you're not going to do it on your own. I didn't. You know, if I had not been in that doctor's office that day and he just kind of forced me to go to the hospital, I mean, I might not be talking to you today. You know, I probably would have just kept going on that same path. So it really just comes down to, you know, I think that there's more shame involved when it's a guy versus when it's a female. Because, you know, again, what male wants to admit that he was anorexic or he was bulimic?
Yeah, that makes sense to me for sure. So
yeah, absolutely.
At this point then, you know, well, let me ask you this. You know, you said you had gone through treatment and whatnot. How long did that process take? And at this point, do you feel that you still have an eating disorder?
No. So, well, the treatment process was, you know, this was close to 9 years ago now. So it's difficult for me to remember the exact time frame. What I do recall was, it was definitely not an overnight process, and you know, it was not the easiest thing to overcome. It took a lot of work. But my saving grace was honestly not so much the traditional treatment, but it was bodybuilding. It was finding the weights. And initially it was just like, you know, let me get healthy again. Let me put on some weight, but you know, have it be clean weight. And I just wanted to get some, you know, like, hey, maybe I'll just get to 150 and you know, just maintain. I didn't have any intense aspirations, but, you know, as I built momentum, I was like, you know what? I really like this. This is, and I felt a calling towards it, you know, and I just ran with it, you know, and I got more heavily involved in it over the years. And, you know, it took me to here. And yeah, I remember telling people at the time, I was like, you know what, I want to do fitness modeling. And they would laugh at me, you know, you know, you're delusional, like, look at you. But I was like, no, you know, I didn't listen. I just kept doing my thing. And that's what saved me, really. It was just that belief and that drive.
That's awesome. It's awesome, the power of what bodybuilding and fitness can do. It's something that I think a lot of people don't understand until they've had it happen. I've had something very similar in my own life happen where it definitely, it saved my life. It sounds like that's the same experience you had too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I feel it is, you know, for many people, it's a positive outlet for anybody, but especially, when you go from a really destructive habit to something that's going to start, you can use the same, example for, you know, drug addicts, that are in treatment. They, you know, going in and taking that obsession that they have, that negative addiction and channeling that obsession into something positive.
Yeah.
Which is, cause, you know, and this is, Grant Cardone, he has a book he calls, you know, Be Obsessed or Be Average. Hmm. And the whole concept is obsession is a gift, but you have to channel it in the right direction.
Hmm.
So, you know, he took his obsession with drugs and negative shit and channeled that into, you know, becoming a millionaire, a multimillionaire. So it's all about, you know, taking your adversity and turning it into something positive, an advantage.
Yeah. My only question in that is, so you know, switch it to something positive. Does that in itself fix the root of the problem?
No, it doesn't. So it's, while I don't think that we can change, I guess, our drive, the things we're drawn to, our drive, you know, we will naturally be drawn to certain things.
Yeah.
You know, I probably would have naturally been driven to weight training anyways. But this was just the catalyst to get me to do it. You know, I think that innately we all have these, you know, obsessions is kind of like, a negative way to look at it, but I can't think of a better word.
No, I think it's a great one. I agree totally.
Yeah, I think that the things we're passionate about, we're just naturally obsessed with them, you know. Hmm. So I think for me, I would have naturally gravitated towards that anyways. It just so happened that that was the tipping point that made me choose it. So does going from an anorexic to, you know, a bodybuilding, does that fix the root of the problem? No, absolutely it doesn't. And you have to go through a process of spiritual alchemy and mental alchemy to really get to the root of that. And it's not going to happen overnight. It's something that you kind of develop along the way. But a lot of it's just rooted in kind of going back to, you know, self-love. And that's really the answer is, you know, there's a reason that you're going through this. There's a reason that people have eating disorders. And you got to get to the root of that. You know, it's not just going to be fixed by channeling it into something, something else, distracting yourself. That's just another distraction.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I was neglecting something by not talking about this. Cause I feel like this, what you're telling me now, this is super important. So what do you mean by that when you say like the self-love and, you know, to this process of finding spirituality?
Yeah. So, you know, essentially all healing, I can't take credit for this quote because I didn't make it, but I wish I did.
Right.
Is a quote by, I forget who it was, but it says, you know, healing is nothing more than removing the unnecessary from your life, and all that's left is your life's purpose. Hmm. So it's removing these limiting beliefs and these kind of these childhood wounds or any kind of like all limiting beliefs are rooted in our childhood. So, you know, somewhere along the way, you know, whether we were made fun of in school or somebody told us we couldn't do something, whatever, we internalize those things and we carry them with us throughout our lives. And it's all just bullshit. Cause when you're born, you come to this world with pure potential. You come to this world, you know, with endless possibilities. And, you know, think of a kid, he's like, yeah, I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a doctor. I want to do this and that. And then somebody's like, well, you can't do that, you know? And then they're like, oh, well, shit, you know, but that's our natural state. We're supposed to be like that. That's why we come into this world like that. Hmm. And it's these external factors that just beat us down, and we can either listen to them and then develop, you know, coping mechanisms, which things like eating disorders, drug addictions, whatever. It's just a sign that you're not addressing something that's bothering you. And when you really peel it back 10 layers deep, it's usually an issue of just self-love and deserving, you know, allowing yourself to receive love and give love.
Finally, you're going to hear Scott talk with Brett Bauer. Brett is known for speaking out about eating disorders and their prevalence in the fitness industry. She's worked for many years helping people get into great shape while managing eating disorders. Her perspective on health and fitness, and as you'll hear, her approach to coaching is insightful and dedicated.
I mean, the amount of people that I know that suffer struggle with the mental emotional side of it is extreme. But like you said, like no one really talks about it. And I don't know if it's because it's like, I don't know if it's ego or what, or this, you know, this picture of like perfection or, you know, having strength or power or something. But like it's hands down, like everybody goes through it. You know, I mean, the levels of the extreme is all different, but for the most part, everyone I've talked to, you know, so yeah, but a lot of people don't really talk about it.
A lot of people, I guess, and maybe it is ego, that a lot of people in the fitness industry don't want to talk about the fact that, you know, this is a struggle. I mean, if you're going to take it to extremes, do you personally think that there is a way to get to an extreme level of low body fat without being extreme with the diet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for females, you know what I mean? I mean, every single person that I've known, myself included, in any kind of prep, I mean, you know, it's extreme. Like, you're doing X amount of hours of cardio a day to try to drop your body fat, to even before you have to drop water. So, I mean, everything about it, I personally think is not very healthy, and it's an illusion of health. Mm. But, yeah, I don't I don't think there's any way. I mean, some people naturally do have those genetics, but those are few and far between. But anyone that I've known, especially when you have the eye in the prize and you're competing, you know that you have to, you know, strip down and be on stage. It takes everything to the extreme, whether it be exercise, whatever supplements you're adding in there. But it's anything that you can't do year round in a healthy way, I kind of put in a category of being extreme. Because if you can't do it for the rest of your life, then, you know, you're going a little bit overboard. But yeah, I mean, I would go up to like two and a half hours of cardio a day, like getting close to show. And it's like, yeah, it's a little overboard, to say the least.
So in your own life, then, do you still compete, or have you decided that you didn't want to take it to that level?
I don't compete anymore. I do, you know, prep for photo shoots depending on, you know, what I'm doing for business, but otherwise, because of the struggle with the emotional, the mental side of it, and then the fluctuation, that's why I stopped competing. Because for me personally, one, stepping on stage and didn't really fulfill me as much as the consequences were. Those are too extreme, you know, because then one, you got to walk back into the gym with going from one certain percentage of body fat and then jumping up to, you know, even just a normal size. I mean, the amount of pressure and stress that gets put on you, because once you reach a level of fitness to such an extreme, it's hard to accept anything less. So that's what kind of started like the kind of addictive process for me. And that's why I had to kind of step away from it, because it was just going down a path that wasn't very healthy and I couldn't keep up with. So yeah, I don't compete anymore, but now I just try to stay in shape year round and, you know, enjoy life a little bit, but I still live the lifestyle. So,
yeah. So, you know, you mentioned, especially for women, it's hard. I've worked with a lot of females and I agree. I think it is harder for women. I think that traditionally, when we think of things like eating disorders, we think of women. But I in your business, do you find that there's also a large percentage of men that suffer too?
Oh, yes. I mean, a lot of females, because we're already emotional, a little bit more on the emotional side than men, I think we're a little more susceptible to falling into it a little bit more, especially because you have to be a little bit more extreme when it comes to the competing side. Yeah. But on the other side, you know, even with clients that I work with that are just trying to lose weight and be healthy, once you kind of get going, sometimes I do see some guys that kind of fall into it where, you know, maybe they just might be a little bit more, you know, overcautious, overthinking, you know, being worried about to eat something or putting labels on food and kind of starting that unhealthy side of it once they kind of get that bug going. But I think as long as you're in a healthy place mentally prior to going into and have a good coach working with you, then I think there are ways to avoid it and to kind of have a healthy lifestyle with it. And even on the competing side, I mean, I know lots of guys that would go to the extreme to drop their body fat and, you know, even though they wouldn't want to admit they had some kind of disordered eating, because that's just what you do. They just know that you restrict yourself and you do the extreme. To them, it didn't seem abnormal, because that's just what you did in the bodybuilding world. So I do think it can go to both sides for men and female, for sure. Even for guys and female and men, you know, looking on the outside, I know for myself, prior to getting into this industry, I always looked at, you know, magazines like Muscle and Fitness Hers, and I don't know if we're Muscle Media.
Oh, yeah.
I would look at the competitors and just be in such awe and, you know, look at fitness models. And I'd always just wonder, like, how come I can't look like this? And once you kind of get in and you see what it's all about, on the extreme side of it, you realize it's kind of an illusion of health.
Yeah.
Where I thought these people were so healthy because they're in shape, but then behind closed doors, you know, learning what everyone's doing or the things that they're taking, it can be the exact opposite. So that's why I try to teach people kind of more the healthy moderation and how to, you know, live healthy year round instead of for 3 months, you know, for stage. So,
You mentioned that there were maybe some signs that people might see that their eating had become problematic. What are some of the things that you would suggest people look out for in their own lives that might clue them in that they're starting to develop an issue?
I think when anything starts to affect your health, affect your time or your finances, I think that's when you might notice like an addiction behavior where, you know, if you're avoiding social situations, you're obsessed with, you know, measuring out the food. And this is even going not in a competitor, but just for an average person that's, you know, trying to lose weight. Any of those signs where everything is a little excessive, more than normal, because I know all those things can start taking away, and I know they did for myself, where I wouldn't go to certain functions because I had to have, you know, my half cup of rice and my 4 ounces of chicken, like I had to be like that. And if it wasn't like that, I would lose my mind.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I couldn't handle it. I had to be exact. And so little things like that, things that would just trigger me that normally wouldn't trigger me. So there's all different signs just depending on the person and what they're trying to do. But I think basically it's just whenever you notice that it's affecting your normal day-to-day life and it's affecting your relationship, then that's when, for myself, was a huge sign that I, you know, I had to pull my roll and kind of see what was going on there.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the business that you do and the people that you work with.
So, to kind of back up a little bit more, I grew up as a dancer and a competitive cheerleader at a very young age. So I was always in a competitive environment. And throughout my teens and my 20s, I struggled with every form of body dysmorphia, eating disorder, you name it. And because of that, I got into fitness and bodybuilding. And then, you know, kind of saw what this world was about. And then from there, I saw that so many people were struggling, not just competitors, but also average people that were just trying to lose weight or were struggling to lose weight long term because they had this emotional connection with food. And I thought for so many years that I was like this monster because I just couldn't control it. Like whether it be a happy emotion, a sad emotion, I associated food with my coping mechanism. And unfortunately, food is the easiest accessible substance, and it's also, you know, the least expensive. So a lot of people gravitate towards food, but a lot of people don't really admit it. So because of that, I work with clients that have, I don't want to say disordered eating, but they might be having trouble losing weight and maintaining it long term because of that yo-yo dieting cycle. But a lot of the yo-yo dieting cycle starts with the mind, and why people can't continue it long term is because something triggers them, whether they fall off the wagon and they eat something bad, or they still have the continual motivation. There's something that's in their mind, whether it be something they were told as a child, you know, that they have to dig deep and kind of figure out what's preventing them from achieving the success, something that they want. So I focus more on the mental side of things, because once the mind is trained and strong and you can overcome certain behavior patterns, then the body will follow. So instead of just focusing on training and the diet, I want to also focus on developing their coping mechanisms and their skills and how they relate to food and how they relate to other relationships in their life and how you can strengthen those and kind of bring it in. Because once all of that is tied together, then everything else is kind of smooth sailing. But the hardest part is the mind and the mental part of it, for sure.
Interesting. You know, I'm in recovery for drug addiction, and a lot of what you're saying reminds me of the things that I've learned in a 12-step program that I'm involved with. And one of the things that we really have to focus on is our powerlessness over drugs. Can you talk about the similarities between addiction to drugs and addiction to food, if you think there is one? And also further, can you talk a little bit about powerlessness?
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, I also went through a lot of groups. You know, I did go to AA, I did go to OA, just because I was in such a place of, like, I needed help of how to overcome, like, binge eating and just being feeling like I was powerless to food. But there's such similarities. The only thing that I always, you know, it sounds horrible, but I always wish, I'm like, man, I wish I was an alcoholic or I was a drug addict instead of having this addiction with food or coping with food, because, you know, you need food to live. So you can't.
Yeah.
For me, I always felt like, you know, food every single day when I got up was an instant trigger for me. So every single moment I just had to be careful. Okay, what emotion am I feeling before I put this in my mouth? Is it going to trigger me to, you know, go off the other way? Because certain foods would react to my brain like cocaine would to someone else.
Wow.
And because I had to be very, like, careful and train myself over the years. But it's very, very similar. But the only difference is, you know, you need food to survive, so you can't be abstinent. So that's the part that's very, very difficult for many people, and why a lot of people still continue with disordered eating and can't really, you know, get over it and overcome it. So there's a huge powerlessness. I mean, I recall literally trapping myself in my apartment for 2 weeks at a time when I was like 22 years old, because I was so deep in that downward spiral, just like how an alcoholic would be. And I was just like binge eating, because it's a roller coaster where, or like a domino effect, or once you start, it's like you can't stop because it's a drug to your body. And you feel ashamed, you feel guilty afterwards. And instead of building up the strength and courage to move forward and like, okay, I'm going to, you know, eat healthy and get back on track, it was easier just to kind of keep going in the downward spiral. Hmm. And then also from feeling that way after, you know, eating a massive amount of food, you just don't really care. So like I would start drinking or I start doing drugs, or it kind of coincides because it's very similar mental patterns. It's just a different substance. So, you know, but what you eat in private, you know, you wear in public. So unfortunately, my disease or my addiction was shown. So it made it even worse because I put on a lot of weight really fast and I have to cover it up, and it just made that cycle just a little more difficult to get out. So there's definitely similarities in all types of addictions, especially with food. But I think anything that you feel addicted to immediately creates that feeling of feeling powerless to it. So
yeah. Well, now you were talking about emotional eating, and you're talking about foods that would trigger you. I'm just curious, like how, what were these foods? And I mean, because this is what are the types of things in your life that you would just, something that could send you off the deep end? And I assume that abstinence from those foods would be one of the ways that you could try to maintain some balance.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. It's like, you know, you think it'd be like something amazing, but I think it's because for so many years I was programmed to, when I was younger, like not eat, because I had to fit certain costumes for stage, for dance, for performance. And then creating labels over the years of foods that are bad. So automatically I thought, oh, I can't eat that. And once I did, I felt guilty and that would trigger me. But simple things like peanut butter, you know, a lot of people, but for myself, like now I'm fine because I don't restrict it for myself, so I don't feel guilt when I eat it. But anything that was, you know, crunchy or snacky, where there's more servings, like cereal or a bag of pretzels or chips, anything where there's not one serving, because I couldn't stop myself once I started, and then I would just kind of go off the deep end from there. But each person is different. And I think a lot of that too, for me, was the texture, was because I was trained to eat, you know, I was programmed on a diet where all my foods were soft. You know, I didn't realize there were so many other options, even if I was bodybuilding. You know, I was so used to eating like oatmeal or rice or cream of rice, you know, but I wanted something like crunchy with texture. So the more I deprived myself of certain foods, the more I wanted them.
Interesting.
So for myself, yeah, it had to do with texture or sweetness. You know, a lot of people and a lot of females, you know, we do have a sweet craving, you know. So because of that, I've had to develop like different recipes or just come up with different things. And now there's so many options with, you know, different healthy, you know, protein bars that are out in the market that I didn't have like 15, 20 years ago that, you know, curb that you know? So there's a lot more things out there now that you can do. So for me, it's like, I just had to find alternative ways to things that wouldn't, you know, spike my sugar and then make me crave more of it. So.
Interesting. It sounds to me like, I'm going to guess here, and you could tell me if I'm right, that some of the tools that you might use with your clients would revolve around keeping a lot of variety and using creativity in their meal ideas.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, honestly, the more options you have, the less restrictions you have, it makes you feel like, you can stay in things long term, because like this is a lifestyle of eating healthy. Yeah. And so I try to keep people, things don't have to be so extreme and so exact, because I don't want them falling into the same routine and the behaviors that I did. Cause when I had an extreme set diet, anything that was like an ounce off of that would make me feel guilty and would put me into that headspace. So I try to teach flexible dieting, where, you know, if you're not craving, you know, your chicken and your rice, you know, then let's make a protein pancake, you know, like there's other things that you can do, but you have to listen to your body. And I think once you let all the restrictions go, and I know this was a huge thing for myself since I was programmed to measuring everything, that once I just stopped and just ate healthy and listened to my body, you know, and obviously having in mind, like I know how to balance out my food and my macros to what I need. Once I just started doing that and started eating healthy, that's when everything changed for me. Hmm. You know, it was very, very scary though, because for 15 years I was programmed to measure everything out and follow an exact diet, and that's all I knew. So taking that step to just kind of play by ear and listen and whatever my body is craving and kind of stay within my means, that's when all that freedom happened for me mentally and emotionally. And I lost a big disconnection with the emotional side of the food, where it was debilitating to my life. So, you know, everybody is different, but I think just teaching like the basics, but also educating them on not feeling like you have to deprive yourself. Cause once you put a label on food and you can't have it, it starts to make like this emotional tension with that food, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I can see that. I'm going to tell you my peanut butter story. My first I've got one. My first contest prep. Yeah. Right.
Oh no.
I couldn't just stay with my portion. And I had gotten laid off from my job for a few weeks, and I'm at home, and I couldn't have the peanut butter in the house, but I didn't want to take it out of my diet. So what I did was I got one of those bank bags that you have a lock on it that you drop off at the, you put money in the bank. I put the peanut butter in that bag and I locked it and I left it in the refrigerator. And then my girlfriend kept the key. So I still kept peanut butter in my life, but I only could do that because somebody else controlled the key to the peanut. I swear to God, that's where I took it.
You know, what's crazy though, is like my other friend who is a bodybuilder queen, he used to tell me a story where same thing. He woke up like he was sleepy.
Yes,
yes. Like, I woke up, there's an empty jar of peanut butter, and it was all over my pillow.
Oh God!
It was all over my, like, I don't even remember eating it. He's like, but that's how like deprived he was, that the things that we do when we're like really dieted down. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, those little things. But I mean, peanut butter. I mean, my roommate in college used to buy like that reduced fat peanut butter, and I used to be like, you have to hide this because it just like it just sends me off as soon as I have some, and she would hide it, but I'd always find it.
So you knew it was there.
Oh, I know. I'd like just try to find it, but yeah, I wish I had someone to have a key. That would have been very useful.
So you know, I'm thinking about this, and I feel like personally, I had some issues with body image when I was a kid, and that led to some issues with the way I looked at food. For a lot of my life, that had gone away, except for times that I was under stress. It never seemed to be a big problem for me personally, but then when I have done contest dieting, at times it has gotten pretty intense for me. Do you feel like somebody who may not have otherwise had a problem could develop one long term, triggered by doing something like a contest prep, some type of an extreme diet?
I mean, I definitely think so. Regardless if you had any previous issues, and if you're just doing a show for fun, anyone that comes to me and says that they want to prep for a show, I just kind of, give them a heads up, just kind of what to expect with the mental side of it too as well, but not veering them either way to whatever they want to do. But I definitely think that is something, just because, everything you have to do in this prep is extreme. So
yeah,
some people are fine. They come out, it was great. I had a lot of fun. I learned about my body. I learned what foods react to my body. I've had other people come out where they're, struggling and they're trying to keep attaining that physique that they had, that leanness that they had. And they've just created this extreme mentality, So I've seen it both ways. I just really think it depends on the person, but I definitely think because it is such an extreme, way of getting in shape and prepping compared to, just normal working out, I think it can set up people, especially with metabolic damage. I mean, the number of females I've spoke to that have gone so long with the extreme dieting that now, their bodies are all out of whack and it's taking them forever to get their hormones adjusted and just get their metabolism back to normal. Tons of pros I know that have gone through that. So it's definitely very common. But yes, I definitely think that anyone who's not predisposed to it could definitely develop odd eating behaviors or, excessive exercise problems. So
I've heard the term disordered eating, and I've heard the term more often eating disorder. Is there a difference between the two?
Yeah, I mean, the only difference is that disordered eating, it just basically refers to a wide range of all different eating behaviors. And then once you're more diagnosed, that's more the eating disorders in specific, whether it be bulimia, binge eating, all the different variations. But disordered eating is more of a general term. So there's so many variations just with that, whether it just be someone who's just over-obsessive with calculating calories or restricting themselves to certain things. So there's so many different variations depending on what it is. But in general, that's just kind of like the main term that's used.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, with your work as a coach, how do you keep your eye on people to make sure that they're not, slipping into something negative?
Well, because I try to have more quality than quantity amount of clients, so I can work very close with them. Because the one thing that I knew that I always needed, because I went to several psychologists and doctors and groups over the years, the one thing that helped me besides just trial and error and kind of learning from my own mishaps is that when I was able to relate to someone that was going through it, and I could be very open and honest about everything that I did, whether it be super embarrassing or whatever, was when I was able to kind of overcome. So my goal is to be available to my clients. So if you want to text me 10 o'clock at night, you're having a moment, or you're out to dinner, you're in a situation, I just want there to always be constant open communication. Because that's where the breakthroughs happen, is when you have that person. So it's kind of like, I guess how AA would have their sponsors.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
For this.
Yeah.
So I just like to be that, phone a friend, like I'm always here no matter what the question and situation. I guarantee you I've done it way worse than you, and I've done it way more time. There's really nothing to be embarrassed about.
So I'm sure that anybody who needs some help could reach out to you, but like you said, you can only help so many people. Can you give some suggestions to people out there who may be suffering with this now, or maybe to somebody who's unaware of the potential issues that could go on with a diet that they might be planning to do?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of things that you can do. I actually put together an ebook that has just tools and tips, just very basic things that were all the stepping stones to help me get to where I am today. like simple things, like we had talked about it before, like restriction with the food, you know, kind of taking the labels off of food, preparing your food so you're not at risk for, you know, not having something there and then being really hungry and then setting yourself up to start binging on other food. Another simple step is, you know, I find a lot of people obsessed with what they weigh. And they use it as a gauge for their progress. But there's a lot of occasions where, and you know this, you know, being in bodybuilding and training, that sometimes you can drop inches, but your weight might stay the same or it might go up depending on what your body did.
Sure.
So I try to teach people to do measurements and go by how your clothes fit. Don't go by that scale, because I could weigh 200 pounds, but as long as I felt good and I was healthy, that number wouldn't matter. But for some reason, that number is like, it becomes fixated in people's brains, and it also deters, you know, what their happiness is going to be. So, you know, I try to veer people away from that. You know, having a journal and really documenting when you're feeling a certain way, if you're in that moment and you want to, you know, if you want to go eat a bunch of food, or if, you know, you want to do something else that's unhealthy, document what you're feeling at that moment. Because I can't tell you how many times where, because I used to think, I'm not going to keep a journal, whatever. And I would just like doodle in it. And then when I actually started journaling, when I was feeling a certain moment, that's when I learned exactly what my triggers were. That's when I learned exactly what was keeping me behind from reaching my goals long term, because I was the queen of self-sabotage. And I didn't realize that, and I didn't know why. But until I started going back and reading my journal for myself, I was able to go back and realize, you know, things from growing up of what was instilled in my brain as a young child that was keeping me back, and it was my own self. So there's just little tools like that you can do to just become more aware. And once you're aware, I think that's one of the first steps. You know, if you are struggling with any kind of emotional eating, is huge, you know, because you can just go back and reflect and really learn from yourself. So those are like some of the basics that I like to start with people, since I know they were things for myself that were very challenging to do. And, you know, to not calculate food to such an extreme and be so obsessed with it was huge for me. But it's definitely possible. You just have to train yourself and train your mind.
This has been Advices Radio Stories Edition, Eating Disorders. I'd like to give a special thanks to Andrea Watson for hosting this episode. And thanks to all the people that made this episode possible. Thanks to Heather Petrasco. Thanks to Nate Tebow. You could check Nate out at his website, natetebowfitness.com. Go there to look at his services. And thanks to Brett Bauer. You can reach out to Brett at brettbauerfittv.com. Go there to check out videos, ebooks, products, and her services. If you think that you might have an eating disorder, we hope that this episode has been helpful, and we suggest that you reach out for the help that you need.
Ouch, I have lost myself again. Lost myself.
Voices Radio.